Welcome to the Winning with Shopify podcast. This is the podcast to help you scale your Shopify store into a money-making machine. The subscription market is predicted to grow to nearly $500 billion by 2025. With Recharge, e-commerce merchants of all sizes can launch and scale subscription offerings. Over 15,000 merchants are currently using subscriptions powered by Recharge, allowing them to grow their business and rely on predictable recurring revenue. Start turning transactions into long-term customer relationships today by visiting rechargepayments.com. Now, over to your host, Nick Truman.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Winning with Shopify podcast. For anybody who hasn't tuned in before, welcome to the show. It's an absolute pleasure to have you with us. My name's Nick. I've been hosting the show for just over 2 years now. And if anybody wants to know a little bit of insight behind the scenes, I've just messed up my first intro before recording this. So there we go. Nobody's perfect, and I'm definitely far from it. This week, we are on week four of our amazing series. We've got one more week coming next week as well. But this is week four of our series sponsored by Recharge, talking about subscriptions and how much subscriptions can help your Shopify store grow. Today, I've got a very special guest. His name is Rooting, and he works in product marketing at Recharge. So without further ado, Rooting, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nick. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you with us. And as we do with all of our guests, why don't you give us a quick overview to your role at Recharge and a little bit about yourself as well?
Yeah, sure. Happy to. So I'm the VP of product marketing here at Recharge. And essentially, my function at Recharge, we're responsible for kind of articulating the company's value proposition to customers, as well as how we're actually differentiated in the market. We do this through a couple of different ways. Primarily, it's about enabling all of our frontline business and technical teams. So that's, you know, our sales teams, our partner teams, customer support, customer success, and so on and so forth, kind of with the necessary knowledge and tools that they need to help our customers to articulate our value to them, articulate our differentiators to them compared to competitors and peers in the industry. We also are responsible for building strong partnerships with our industry peers to bring a lot more valuable integrations to market for our customers to use. And then lastly, my team is also responsible for creating a place where everyone in the Recharge community, whether they be customers or partners or prospects and investors, to really engage in e-commerce discourse. So that's a little bit about my team. For me personally, I've spent about 10 years leading different product marketing and partnership functions across a variety of different software companies. Primarily spent the last 10 years in cybersecurity and IT. So it is my kind of first forego in e-commerce, and I'm just having an absolute blast right now.
Lovely. And it's such an exciting space to be in, I think. And the first thing we're going to talk about a little bit is the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But the pandemic as well, for anybody who's kind of new to the e-commerce space, or you've tuned into this and gone, I don't know what I'm doing and I need some help. Well, you're in the right place, but B, you won't know actually that the pandemic was just one of many different things that has actually really accelerated and pushed the e-commerce space forward. Everything from when like mobile websites came out to responsive sites to smartphones as just one example. But yeah, the pandemic especially has really accelerated e-commerce growth. And obviously Recharge, huge important part of that. We had Shopify themselves on the podcast in, just winding back my brain, it would have been December 2020. So it would have been the year of COVID, the year when COVID and the pandemic really sort of kicked off. It was in March that year in the UK we first started shutting down. And December that year, we had Shopify on. And they said that just in the UK, the sort of Q2, so that was from Jan, Feb, March, and it was April, May, June. So in April, May and June, the number of Shopify stores registered in the UK doubled. That is how quickly people were panicking about jobs and turned to the internet and said, the shops are shut. People have to buy stuff online. Let's start an online shop. So, I mean, from Recharge and certainly from your point of view, tell us about, you know, what's kind of evolved and changed since the pandemic's happened in the e-com space.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Our business, because such a large percentage of our revenue comes from the Shopify platform and Shopify customers, what we see in our business is actually pretty closely mirrored to, I think, what Shopify sees. And, you know, e-commerce, we obviously, everyone in the space saw a huge amount of growth through the pandemic. I think it's safe to say that looking back now in 2022, when you look back on the last 2 years, I think a lot of the 3 to 5 year growth trajectory that people had modeled for e-commerce really got pulled forward in the span into a span of, you know, like 12 to 18 months. And that was, you know, a significant amount of demand, obviously, as you know, brick and mortar stores shut down, everyone stayed at home and was quarantining. But I think what was interesting was if you look, you know, a year out from that Q2 in 2020, lot of businesses heavily overinvested in their inventory, heavily invested in their physical supply chain to be able to kind of accommodate the demand that we saw that was created by the pandemic. And if you look at, you know, the latest round of earnings from, you know, all the big retail shops, you know, primarily, you know, if you look at something like an Amazon, I think what we are seeing now is that the industry is moving back to a slower but more sustainable period of growth. And we've seen a lot of that 5-year horizon growth really get pulled forward in the matter of, you know, 1 to 2 years. But what you see today is actually a little bit slower growth. 2021 certainly was not as crazy as 2020. 2022 is certainly not as crazy as 21. And I think that that trend will continue, but I think it's a much more sustainable growth. And it's largely, I think, what the investment community, what the business community had projected for kind of the natural growth of e-commerce had, you know, COVID not actually happened. And so I think that is actually really interesting. And if you look at the subscription space, you know, specifically, the projections are actually still, I think, pretty wild. By 2028, I think folks are expecting the space to actually, you know, top $2.5 trillion. I would say when we look at our customer base and when we look at the data from our customers, we saw growth across all the industries for subscription processing in 2021. Obviously, again, not as crazy high growth as in 2020. So I think a lot of customers got turned on to the ease and the convenience of subscriptions and the ease and convenience of having things show up at your door without you really having to think about it. When they saw enough value that, you know, those customers are continuing to subscribe and the benefit for our merchants is that the lifetime value of those customers really went from a customer that maybe tried out a product or tried out a brand for one product and now are becoming a repeat subscriber and really an avid customer and fan of those products. And I think you expect us to see that in 2022 going forward, right? Building on what we saw in 2021. And I think subscriptions in particular actually provide the level of stability and predictability for both the customer, but also for the brand when they think about, you know, revenue forecasting and things of that nature. So it's definitely been an interesting evolution. I think it's hard for folks to imagine where we would be 2 years into the pandemic. But looking back, you know, certainly a lot has happened. And I think you saw a lot of the growth get pulled forward in the first 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess a really big question from your merchant's perspective, did they find that during COVID, you know, time of financial, you know, lack of security, you don't know what's going to happen next, it's unpredictable. Did a lot of your merchants find that actually they were getting less people, you know, percentage wise, signing up for subscriptions on the basis they didn't want to commit money long term to a product? Or actually, did you find that was the opposite? Because, you know, thinking out loud, and my assumption would be that they're not buying it in a store anymore. They're just, I come home and it's come through the letterbox.
Yeah, it really was a bit of a replacement. I think a lot of people saw e-commerce, you know, prior to the pandemic, they saw e-commerce as kind of a nice to have, right? It was like there were still the things that you buy are not necessarily things that you absolutely need. And I think that shifted with the pandemic as all the stores closed down and people really saw, you know, whether it be the Amazons of the world or, you know, other online marketplaces and even, you know, brands that are obviously powered by Shopify, they really saw them as a lifeline to make sure that they get food, that they get pet food, that they get, you know, daily household supplies delivered to them. And I think when you look ahead at what we're actually seeing now, I think our customers, the merchants themselves, today are actually facing a confluence of kind of macro headwinds that are actually much more challenging than what they dealt with in the during the pandemic. If you look at, you know, supply chain constraints that largely were caused by the pandemic, right? If you look at inflationary pressures that are happening globally right now, again, largely caused by the pandemic, there's labor market shortages in the United States as a function of kind of the great resignation and folks kind of, you know, being mindful of going back to a brick and mortar place to go and work because of the risk of transmission from COVID. You've got higher interest rates from central governments and central banks trying to combat these inflationary pressures. All of these things, I think the confluence of these macro headwinds are actually making it really, really challenging, much more challenging for our merchants and our customers' businesses to grow in 2022, looking forward, than it really ever was for them in 2020 and 2021.
Yeah, and I mean, you've raised so many interesting points there. We'll try not to go too political on this, because I think there is a lot going on around the world at the moment. I think everything you've just said about the US is the same in Europe. You know, we've got fuel shortages. Well, not shortages. We did have a fuel shortage for a short while, partly caused by our own fuel companies here saying they were running low on stock, which apparently was a lie, and then everybody panicked. So we dealt with that for about a month recently. But yeah, there's labor shortages right there across the world. As you say, it's the great resignation. Yet I was reading a couple of days ago that actually globally more people are applying for jobs right now than pretty much ever.
Yeah.
And actually there's a kind of U-turn on the big resignation, which I think is very interesting. But it's amazing what you've just said actually about if people sign up to a subscription on a Shopify store, especially for some of the more bare essentials and basics and things that you just need to survive, having that almost guarantee that you know it's going to turn up. It's almost like there's been the kind of fear factor of there's supply shortages everywhere. But actually, if I order on a subscription model, I don't have to rely on my local shop having it in stock and stocking it. I can order some of that stuff online and digitally and know it's going to turn up, because I've already almost like sort of reserved that slot every month or every week to have those things delivered. And we've seen a massive increase here in the UK of things like there's the one called HelloFresh. I don't know if you have HelloFresh in the US. So they obviously have
we do.
Yeah, massive subscription model. You know, I don't personally use it, but you sign up, you get food delivered to your house, and it's all already chopped and, you know, sort of split into set meals for you. You just chuck it in the pans. You're still freshly cooking, but someone's done the prep work for you and decided what you're going to eat. It's a really good concept. So I guess that being a good example, actually, of coming on to, you know, the next question, which is the value of subscriptions. You know, I think a lot of people, if you haven't listened to any of the other episodes in July, I highly recommend you go back and listen to some of our previous episodes. You know, we've got a few different store owners, had somebody else from Recharge on week one as well. But the value of subscriptions is huge, isn't it, for a Shopify store, especially as you know what's coming up, you know what you're going to sell, and you can actually start to build the business around that, because you know you've got those customers, you've essentially got those orders in advance. You can start to build an actual model around it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of two sides of the same coin. And you had just kind of laid out the case for the consumer side, which is the how nice it is to have a predictable schedule that the things that you need to kind of run your day-to-day life just show up at your door, right? Without you really having to think much about it. You know, the other side of that coin from a business or from a merchant perspective is that they actually get to build a really strong recurring revenue base from customers that find their products to be valuable. Right. And I think in the last, you know, I would say half decade or so, people have really kind of started to shift the focus to trying to figure out how to maximize the lifetime value of their customer base. And I think that has been accelerated by some of the things that you're seeing around online privacy, you know, the changes that Apple recently has made around IDFA and advertising tracking. And I think within our customer base, what we're seeing now is that there's less of a focus specifically on customer acquisition. And, you know, I think Facebook has certainly made it very, very easy for a lot of small businesses, particularly the ones on Shopify, to really grow the number of new customers that are coming through the funnel for them, you know, with a lot of the different targeting tools that Facebook offers. But as a result of some of the changes that I think you're seeing in the Apple landscape and Google is going to soon be taking part in that, a lot of our brands have shifted away from just purely looking at their businesses, how do I grow the total number of customers, to how do I build a very loyal following of highly engaged customers, and how do I maximize the lifetime value of those customers? And so I would say that, you know, today brands are more focused than ever on customer retention, extending the lifetime value of the existing set of customers that they have. And when it comes to things like supply chain shortages, you know, unfortunately, we have a lot of businesses that are in a position where they may not have enough inventory to service all the demand that they have. And if you're in that position, I've talked to a lot of customers who say, like, hey, it's actually very helpful for me to understand the lifetime value of my entire customer base and who are subscribers as opposed to who are first-time customers. And if I need to reserve some excess inventory for my subscribers, because those are my best customers, right? And so it allows the businesses to do, you know, better forecasting and allows them to do better management of inventory and of cash flow. And those are really, really powerful things for a merchant, because a lot of these merchants, you know, they do run on a very tight cash balance, right? They're not taking tens of millions, hundreds of millions in investment from the venture capital or from the private equity community. So they are running on a tight cash balance, and having the predictability of, you know, a subscription business and that generates a ton of recurring revenue, that maximizes the lifetime value of their customers. And if you happen to have a product and an offering that has relatively low churn rates, it really actually is a significant accelerator for those businesses.
Yeah, definitely. And what I love is your answers are so comprehensive. I mean, I almost don't know where to start with the response to that. But I think one thing in particular that I think is so important, and I'm going to flag last week, you know, mm-hmm. Stephen from Keep Candles we had on, you know, their candles, they're not the cheapest on the market and they're aware of that, but their customer service after talking to him is second to none. We've got a luxury client we're talking to literally this morning. And I said, I don't want to promote my own podcast, but you've got to go and listen to Stephen's talk. My client today was saying exactly the same as Stephen, that they respond to every customer individually. And they even put handwritten notes in when they know that customer's name, because they know that customer has purchased from them several times and they start to recognize the names as they go through.
Yeah.
That is customer service 101. And so if you're not doing that in your store right now, I highly recommend start to look at those sort of things, which again, kind of feeds back to what you've just said about, you know, that is lifetime value building. That is how you start to grow and develop that lifetime value, with the key point being that actually a subscription model, it almost kind of jumpstarts over that step, doesn't it? It's not so much about actually how do we engage with the customer and do customer service correct. It's like, I've just got an email, you know, from my Shopify store, a notification. Oh, look, someone subscribes, that I now know that's, you know, $50, $100 a month in our bank account to buy a product. So I know I've got that order every single month now until they cancel. So the job is not so much on convincing them to come back and buy again. The job now on is just, you know, build a relationship, build that relationship with the customer, get the customer to trust you. And then actually the best result is the customer does nothing. They receive the product, enjoy the product, maybe leave you a little review, but they don't have to do anything to continue receiving those products.
Yeah. I mean, the way I like to think of it is that it actually allows the entrepreneur, allows the people running the business to focus on the core and the heart of a business, which is not figuring out what marketing campaigns to run to get new customers. It's actually like figuring out what is the best product that we can put out there. What's the best offering that we can put out that delights our customers the most, right? And I think that if it's one thing that has really gotten kind of equalized, I would say, in the last 10 years with this mix of commerce experiences that both span digital realms and digital spaces and physical spaces, is that when we think about the experience that customers have now of the brands that they interact with, the experience, the bar for that experience and the competition for what a great customer experience looks like is pretty intense these days. You had made a point earlier about how it kind of allows you to skip the fold of having to do the marketing and the customer acquisition and all of that directly into, like, how do you deliver a great experience for a customer? And you use Keep Candles as an example of that. And from our side, the way that we're seeing it is, if you think about what a great customer experience was 5 years ago, as opposed to what it is now, consumers have a totally different expectation of shipping and logistics, right? I think Amazon has kind of set the bar, at least in the United States, of like, everybody just comes to expect, you know, free 1-2 day shipping. And that's actually really, really difficult for the individual stores, you know, that don't have access to a large fulfillment network to be able to compete against. Or everyone just kind of now expects in-store pickup if you buy online as a result of some of the behaviors of the pandemic. And people expect better loyalty and rewards programs. They expect, you know, curated experiences or sustainable business practices and zero carbon footprint shipping. They expect better customer support, that if I call into customer support, you know, it's not, I don't have to go through a 5-minute phone tree, that there's someone on the other end of the line that I can talk to right away. And those customer experience expectations don't really, you know, they span a bunch of different industries. It's not like you have one set of experiences or expectations for a beverage vendor and a whole different set for a pet foods vendor and a whole different set for an apparel and fashion vendor. You kind of have the same expectations of customer experience for everyone. And I think one of the nice things about subscriptions is that you don't really necessarily have to focus on, you know, the cash flow and building a recurring revenue business, because the model of subscriptions automatically kind of takes care of that for you. And it allows you a lot more kind of brain space and time to think about, how do I actually just offer the best experience and the best product and the best service to my most loyal customers?
One thing I'm going to pick up on actually from what you've just said, I think is really, really important here, is you don't necessarily have to meet the customer expectation. And I think that's something that we've had people mm-hmm. on the podcast before saying, look, we wanted to, like, you know, be the next Amazon and offer next day delivery and it's free and all the way.
Yeah, good luck.
But we just can't. Yeah, yeah, we can't. We just can't do that. We're not a fulfillment house like they are, and we're not going to give into the Amazon machine. We're not going to pay them, you know, sort of 30% of our margins just to send the products out. So some people, I think the most important thing is you need to know what your customer expectation is right. to then know at what levels we're going to meet it, what levels we're not. And then most importantly, if your customers want next day delivery, it's one thing to just offer them next day delivery. It's another thing to then say, look, if our customers want it that quick, actually, we're going to do something completely different. We're going to come up with a third option, a wild card option, which could be something like, we're going to explain that we only use eco-friendly delivery, which is never going to be next day.
Exactly.
So if you want it next day, go on our Amazon store. We don't make much money and you're not going to get exclusive offers from us and all these reasons why you should go, you know, you shouldn't use our Amazon store. But actually, if you're not interested in that stuff, and especially with subscriptions, if you want it on the first of every month, just let us know, because we could just send it out on the 25th, 26th, and it'll be in your mailbox on time, and it will definitely be there. You know, we'll make sure it's there a day or two in advance. So you could even then say, instead of choosing the day you want it to arrive, you say, what's the latest date you want it to arrive? Again, with that description, we only use, you know, the most eco-friendly delivery methods, which mean our products are sent when lots of products need to move from one place to another, which means they might take 2 or 3 extra days to get there. But it also means there's not a half empty plane flying across the US to then deliver it just to
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Which again, I think, again, that you need to understand what the customers want and what their expectations are. And obviously good ways to do that: focus groups, customer feedback surveys, even booking some, you know, face-to-faces or even Zoom conversations with some of your customers, just to say, look, we're happy to give you a $20 voucher on our site, but we'd just love to ask you some questions. Is that okay? Can we have 20 minutes of your time? You know, I've done a couple for Tech Tools recently, and they've actually followed up and come back to me saying, you raised a couple of things when we spoke to you, this, this, and this. I just wanted to let you know, we are changing those now. Not, you weren't the only person to say it. We're not doing it for you, but we do want you to be aware. We are changing those things now because they were good ideas and we want to see it change. It's like, great, I'm a customer for life. You know, you've actually done something for me and you've listened to me, come back and had that conversation. I think it's really important.
Absolutely. I think that that is the thing that is fundamentally different about D2C. Right, is that it actually allows you to compete on a completely different competitive plane. And so, you know, I mentioned, you know, better logistics and better fulfillment before, but the reality is you're 100% right. Like most of the Shopify merchants or the merchants that are on Shopify and in the D2C space that don't have Amazon as a sales channel, they know that they're never going to compete and win on, you know, free 1-day shipping or free 2-day shipping, right? But what they compete on to win, and in fact, those things actually kind of commoditize the value that they provide elsewhere to the customer in the value chain. The things that they compete on is better customer service. The thing that they compete on are things like, you know, whether your values align for things like carbon neutral shipping and what the packaging looks like and what the overall customer experience looks like. And if you can offer, you know, a curated experience for a consumer. And I think if you look at the true distinction between kind of the brands that, you know, go on the Amazon experience as opposed to the brands that build the D2C experience, it really comes down to, I think, the folks in D2C are starting to really understand the power of building a customer community and understanding the power of building a highly engaged and loyal following, and that there's some sense of identity and belonging that they create for their customers. And that's just really, really hard to do when you're on a, you know, a giant monolithic platform like an Amazon, because everybody kind of gets commoditized and modularized in that way. So I think our customers, particularly the ones on Shopify, have done a great job of kind of differentiating themselves with their customers on things that, you know, they don't necessarily have to compete against large platforms that have, you know, nailed the fulfillment side. But they're really competing on things like a better customer experience, whether it's support or whether it's sustainable business practices, you know, better loyalty and membership programs and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's all about picking your battles, isn't it? I think, yeah, Amazon, you're not going to beat them on, you know, speedy, automated, generic customer service, for example.
100%.
But you could send a custom message. You're not necessarily going to beat them on, certainly in bits of the UK, we've got same-day Amazon delivery, which I have to be honest, is so convenient at times.
Yeah.
But a small local store could run Google Shopping ads with in-store. So it will say like, okay, if I'm, you know, I'm Googling this product, assuming I'm going to go to Amazon, try and get a same day delivery. Oh no, wait, there's a shop or a store that's between my office and my house. I can go and I can buy it online. I can pick it up on the way home. So it's actually still an online sale and I collect it on the way back, you know, at home this evening, which also means I have to enter the store to go and pick it up, which I know, to be honest, a lot of our listeners, a lot of you guys are going to be what we call in the food industry, dark kitchens. You know, you are just an online store. You're not a physical shop. You can't walk in the door, which is fair enough. But I think this kind of leads on a little bit to something regarding Recharge we haven't covered at all this month, which feeds in, I think, nicely to customer retention and keeping those customers engaged. And yeah. That is SMS. So tell us about Recharge SMS. Yeah. What is it? How does it work? You know, how does it all plug into the bigger picture and into the customer subscription?
Yeah, I would love to. So Recharge SMS, it's an offering that we introduced in 2021. And effectively, it's an SMS-based system that allows customers to manage their kind of entire experience with the brands that they're interacting with, right? So you buy a product from a brand, that brand lets you know that product, you know, that order has been received, that they're preparing the product to be shipped, that product is shipped, that product has arrived at your front door, and now you're using the product. And you know you're running out of the whatever the product was that you built or that you bought, and you want to go back and order another one. So you reach out to the brand again. That entire kind of interaction, oftentimes right now, that is either done directly on the merchant's website, or that's done with a support agent, or that's done via email. I think the nice thing about doing a lot of this over SMS is that it's actually a much more intimate way for brands and their customers to connect. It cuts right through the noise. Very rarely do you go inbox zero in email, but most people go inbox zero in text messages. So I think that, you know, there's a tremendous amount of power in being able to communicate directly with your customers. And I think the nice thing about, you know, SMS from a business perspective, a lot of customers have told us, is that it gives you a really good sense of who the customer is, right? Everybody has kind of multiple email addresses. And by keying in on the email address as the customer identity, it's actually really, really hard because you can just go and create a new email address. The nice thing about SMS is that everybody pretty much only has one phone number. And so it gives you a really good sense and a really good idea of who the customer is on the other end that you are working with, that you're dealing with, that is buying your product. And it allows you then to kind of create a set of curated experiences. We have merchants on our side that actually segment their SMS cohorts in terms of how they interact with them. And they know that some of them are a younger crowd, or some of them like this product over that product, and they actually interact and engage with them differently over SMS. That's much easier to do if you know exactly who your customers are, as opposed to doing it over email or you know, over a customer portal where people are having to log in. So yeah, it's a product we introduced last year. It's done phenomenally. I mean, the engagement rates, the adoption rates for customers that are now using Recharge SMS is phenomenal. We've actually made it a free offering for any Recharge customer. So if you're buying the standard edition, you're buying the pro edition or our enterprise edition, Recharge SMS is actually just included as part of the service. And really our thesis there is that if we help you drive more engagement with your customers, and we believe that SMS does that in a way that, you know, email and on the website experience cannot do because it's not as intimate, we believe that ultimately drives the lifetime value of those customers. And really, it's a mutual winning for both Recharge and for our customers.
Nice. And the SMS is, as you say, it's so good. It gets straight into somebody's inbox. You don't have to, you know, faff about with different email addresses or trying to get through the spam filter. I mean, if anyone's got an email inbox like any of mine, and I do have multiple ones, you know, I've a couple at work. I have another one for the podcast. I have another one I actually have two in my home life because PayPal blocks one of mine once. So I now have two Gmail accounts outside of work. So every time I'm logging into Netflix or anything, you know, on a new computer or TV or whatever, I'm like, oh my gosh, which email was it? And it does become an absolute palaver. Whereas, yeah, getting an SMS into somebody's inbox, like even saying, you know, say it's a monthly subscription, which I assume is the most common, that's going to arrive tomorrow morning, or that's going to arrive in 2 days' time. You know, hope you're surviving the heat if you're in the UK right now. But I think, yeah, little things like that you're trying to work the customer to be engaged as long as possible. You know, be a customer, be on that subscription for as long as possible, which is, as we said straight away, is such an easy game compared to trying to acquire all new customers new the first time. And we've had so many clients over the years that they get so tired and it's so expensive just trying to acquire the new customer that then you don't have enough time to actually invest in the retention side of things and get that second, third, fourth order from a customer. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, we're too busy getting new customers in, which we have to rely on so that we can't get repeat orders. And if we could get repeat orders, we wouldn't have to rely so much on the new stuff coming in, or we could grow both sides. So SMS is a very, very clear way to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting leaky bucket problem. You know, the data on our side, basically what we are kind of seeing is that the value of a subscriber is anywhere between 4 to 5 times as much as the value of a one-time buyer, And so if you are a business that is trying to figure out the balance between how much of my business do I run on just kind of one-time purchases and one-time revenue, as opposed to how much of it do I allocate towards really building a true subscription and recurring revenue business, you know, that's something that a lot of our customers are thinking about now, which is, hey, if I get a subscriber, that person is worth 4 to 5 times as much as if I get a one-time customer. And if I enable things like SMS with that customer and I engage with that customer for order management purposes or for customer support purposes or whatever, you know, that customer's lifetime value actually shoots up even more. And now you're talking about, you know, 6 to 7 times, 7 to 8 times as much value as what you get through a one-time channel. And the subscription customers tend to churn a lot less than the one-time customers do. And so on all matters of where you're looking at on your income statement, whether it's in terms of accelerating revenue or it's in terms of reducing OpEx and reducing costs, you know, building a subscription business and leveraging tools like SMS to engage with the subscribers that you've brought in is a much more efficient way to run your business than constantly thinking about how do I get the next cohort of brand new customers. So I think the point that you made on that was absolutely, you know, spot on.
Yeah, definitely. For anyone who's not tuned in before, my background, what I do most of the day is PPC SEO. So certainly on pay-per-click advertising on Google, you know, we're looking at the costs to acquire a new customer. And on average, regardless of product, you can be expecting to pay anything from sort of $20 to sometimes in the hundreds to acquire that customer. I saw a very interesting business model a while ago. This wasn't a store necessarily, a specific store I can flag, but it was a case study on another agency's site that one of my teams had to go and have a quick look at. And it was a clothing brand. And I thought it was interesting that they had started, well, they were saying hypothetically, you could start a subscription model for a clothing brand on the basis that actually we, as long as we know your size at any one time, so you can manage your size in the back end, we will send you a new activewear set. So it was sportswear. We will send you a new activewear set, you know, tops and bottoms every other month, for example, but we'll charge you every month, which makes them always feel like half price. So it might be, I don't know, $30 or $40 for the set, but we're going to charge you $15 a month. So then you sort of, you know, on the mid months, you're paying in advance. Second month, you pay that same $15 again, you get a new set sent out. So I've got a note to ask you about some of your most innovative merchants. First question before we dive into just your general list, which I'm quite excited about. Do you have any merchants trying to do that? Things that you wouldn't necessarily expect to be a subscription model, but actually they've made it work. They've put it together and customers are loving it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's actually really fascinating because we have a lot of customers in the fashion and apparel space.
Okay.
And I think that the subscription models and the subscription businesses that they've built really kind of fall into one of two categories, I would say. One cohort is exactly what you just kind of described, right? It's the, you know, stuff that you go through on a pretty regular, pretty quick basis. And you're undershirts, undergarments, socks, the things that kind of wear out much quicker. And there's kind of value in just having that be replenished without really thinking about it, right? Like, you know, you always need a white undershirt. You always kind of just need black socks or white socks or whatever your preference of color is.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And those types of things, you know, you don't really want to actually think that much about before you go and buy it. And so there is actually a value in having a subscribe and save model for those kinds of clothing, right? And then I think separate from that, and so we do have customers. Cuts Clothing is a good example of a men's clothing store where you can actually sign up for a membership and they will give you, you know, kind of a subscribe and save experience as it relates to, you know, your undershirts and things of that nature for men. So that's kind of one experience, the subscribe and save within fashion and within apparel.
Yeah.
The other one is where, you know, a lot of times they actually tend to be clothing retailers. They've got, you know, they carry a lot of different brands. They still have kind of the same kind of connection and sense of belonging that they've built and the experiences they've built with their customers. So it's not, you know, a large, you know, clothing retailer like a Macy's or anything like that. And really what they're offering as part of their subscription is actually kind of a paid membership experience. And so you pay, you know, $10 a month, $15 a month, whatever the price ends up being. And what you get as a result of it is you get free shipping, or you get $10 or 10% off every time that you buy, or you get exclusive access to new drops, you get exclusive access to early sales and things of that nature. And so you're paying for the benefits of a membership program that gives you access to a bunch of different benefits, that particular retailer or that particular brand. And that can also be on subscription. You know, like you had mentioned, you know, sometimes you pay monthly for a benefit that you redeem every other month or for every third month and so on and so forth. So I think there's a lot of different ways that you can kind of cut subscription experiences, even for businesses that don't necessarily have a product or an offering that is great for Subscribe and Save. Usually when we think of Subscribe and Save, we tend to think of household items that are kind of replenishment items, right? You know, your kitchen and bathroom things and so on and so forth. But I do think that there is a model that a lot of our customers have made work, even though their product offerings are not actually in those spaces. And they've gotten creative with it. Curated boxes is another good example of that, where, you know, you put a bunch of different things into a single box and you're really selling the experience of that box. A good example is, you know, Boxu, which is a Japanese food and snack merchant on Shopify. They've been with Recharge for quite some time now. And they kind of import a bunch of different types of snacks from Japan and they package it in a box and they ship that out to customers. And you're getting a different box of different things every single time. So it's not really a replenishment in the sense that, you know, it's the same product over and over and you're using it just for the pure usage value of it. But it's actually more about the delight and the curated set of snacks and things of that nature that you're getting access to that, you know, you wouldn't otherwise have access to. So there's a lot of different, I think, interesting models that you can build around subscriptions. It's not really just the Subscribe and Save piece. And from a product perspective, those are some of the things that we're actually exploring now to see if we can help businesses build recurring revenue businesses, even if they don't necessarily have a product that is ideal for Subscribe and Save.
I think it's so powerful, actually. I've just been looking at those two examples, and I think it's so powerful, actually, looking at certainly the Cuts Clothing one, where it's like you pay to become a member and have a membership. Once you've got the membership, you get, I think on their site, you get 25% off everything. So mm-hmm. Recharge is running the tech to provide that membership, to give you, you know, to renew that membership every, you know, every month, every year, depending on what the frequency you set up is. And then it automatically connects into Shopify. So once you're logged in, I assume you then get the discounts on everything, or it applies the cart, you know, that kind of thing. So I think it's really powerful, actually, looking at how you can hook people in. And I think, you know, sort of bad mouthing them earlier, but Amazon's done it really well. You know, you sign up to Amazon Prime and you get super fast free delivery. You get access to all their music. You also get all of the Amazon Prime TV, film, etc. It's a very compelling package. And I think,
absolutely,
as you just outlined with those two examples, it's about getting creative with the type of subscription, not just necessarily going, okay, we sell toothpaste. You're going to need a new toothpaste every month. Sign up monthly and we'll send you one toothpaste every month.
Right.
You can get a lot more creative than just that, I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's where, as we were kind of doing research in this new potential new type of customer and potential new product, one of the things that we realized is that in order for you to kind of find value in running a paid memberships type of program where you're kind of your members are paying access to a set of benefits, oftentimes the more SKUs, the more items that you have, the more interesting bundles you can kind of create, right? The more interesting experiences you can kind of create. And going back to your Amazon example, if you think about Amazon Prime and what that membership really is, it's a bundle of just seemingly kind of totally unrelated, unconnected things, right? Amazon Video, Amazon Library, you've got free shipping, you've got, you know, cloud storage for your photos. But oftentimes the best bundles are actually the ones that have nothing to do with each other, because then there's actually something in it for everyone. And you can get to building a, you know, 100 million, 200 million plus membership program in terms of number of subscribers if you have a very wide and kind of cast a wide net in terms of the different types of offerings that you put in that membership program, because then there's something that appeals to everyone. And I think it's the same thing that we see when we look at customers that are doing these types of membership programs, is that the wider the potential set of benefits, the wider the inventory of, you know, SKUs or products that are available for you to redeem a benefit against that set of products, the more appealing the overall membership program would be.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think I'm just keeping a very conscious eye on the clock. I think let's start to come into land now. I think, you know, really appreciate your time certainly on those. I think some really good examples, actually, of where you could use subscriptions, build some recurring revenue when actually it doesn't seem obvious. I guess the last one I'd throw into the ring quickly as well before I forget is care kits. or insurance or some sort of extended warranties. Again, there's things you can get creative with, and there's obviously different restrictions in different countries and certainly the US, different states in terms of how to offer those things. But I guess let's come into land now. Let's look forwards. What are you guys expecting to happen both in the e-commerce space and how does Recharge fit into that? You know, what are Recharge working on at the moment in terms of new tech? Or obviously don't give away anything you're not allowed to say, but I love this question because I'm all ears. You know, is there anything exciting coming that you think, actually, we've listened to our customers, this is what we should be doing at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that is that it goes back to, you know, what we've talked about a lot on this podcast, which is how are our merchants thinking about maximizing customer lifetime value right now? And I think as the advertising landscape shifts more towards a kind of consumer privacy centric model, you know, new customer acquisition is going to get more and more difficult. You layer that on top of some of the macro conditions that I had alluded to earlier, I do think that the industry is figuring out how to, you know, navigate a global pandemic and supply chain constraints and high interest rates from a borrowing cost perspective and all of these things. And the kind of goal that everybody has shifted to is, okay, we've got this group of existing customers that we know are super valuable, that are super loyal to us. How do we maximize the lifetime value of that group? Which means how do we provide a better customer experience in terms of product offerings, as well as in terms of service to that group, right? And so when we talk to those customers and we think about what's on the horizon for us and what we're building, it really is about that. It's about how do you address what our customers, our merchants need first and foremost. And you've got, and the way that we are thinking about it is, you know, we've got about 20,000 merchants in the space in terms of the number of paying customers to Recharge. And about a third of their business right now is recurring revenue, is recurring orders. And about two thirds of that is one times. And that's pretty, you know, consistent, I think, with what you typically see just in e-commerce and in D2C in general, is businesses that have a subscription element to their business. It tends to be about a third of their business. And so we're pretty good proxy for that in many ways. And a lot of our customers are coming to us and saying, like, how do I make that a 50-50 split? You know, how do I make that a two-thirds, one-third split, but the other direction? How do I make it so that two-thirds of my business is on subscription and one-third is on one-times? And so as we think about, you know, new product introductions, new feature introductions, that's one thing that is very top of mind for us, is that the current existing offerings that Recharge has really is around how do we make it easy for you to manage recurring billing for the existing subscribers that you have. And I think in some ways, if you build a really good subscription experience, you'll get more and more subscribers. But there are other things that you can do to kind of showcase the value around, you know, ease of delivery, the value around just the niceness of having things show up at your door that you don't really have to think about, but you know that you need. And really evangelizing that to the other two-thirds of your business right now that doesn't actually subscribe. And so we're constantly looking for ways to help our merchants expand their subscription business and their subscription processing to be a larger and larger portion of their overall business. Because at the end of the day, I think if you maximize the lifetime value of the existing customers that you have, you're running a much more efficient business. You're driving your costs down. You're getting better visibility into cash flow. You're getting better visibility into demand and into forecasting and into your inventory. So there's a whole host of benefits that come with building a recurring revenue business. And we're just getting started in terms of, you know, phase one, I think, or act one for us was help the existing customers that have strong subscription businesses manage the billing and the payment side of it. I think the next step for us is really going to be, how do we then help the customers that don't have a large subscription business? How do we help them get one, right? And how do we help them convert their existing one-time customers to be more repeat buyers and subscribers to those brands?
Nice. Nice. I mean, there's so much in there. And I think one thing I love about Recharge as well is you guys didn't just pop up overnight, did you? I think the first time I came across Recharge was probably 5 or 6 years ago at a meetup in London talking about Shopify. So definitely one to check out. So if you're listening in and thinking, no, subscriptions don't apply to me, this is week four now, I've listened to all 4 weeks, drop me an email and I'll either try and convince you differently, introduce you to one of these guys, or agree that we found that one business that can't use use subscriptions in any way, shape or form. But Rooting, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Awesome. And next week, things might change last minute, so I won't say the name quite at this stage. But we've got one of Recharge's last episodes with us for this current series, which will be next week. We've got one of their retailers coming on on as well, talking about self-care, which is going to be quite exciting. So they are an e-commerce store using Shopify. So looking forward to that as well. So yeah, if you've enjoyed what you've heard today, please hit that subscribe button. Please check out Recharge as well, specifically the Recharge for Shopify app. And we hope to see you again on the podcast soon.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. You can subscribe to our weekly newsletter for exclusive offers at winningwithshopify.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook group by searching for Winning with Shopify on Facebook. Over and out.